I Eat Green with Bhavani, Wednesdays at 5 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another Wednesday at the Progressive Radio Network. I'm Bhavani, and you're listening to I Eat Green. And I am so happy we are finally having a little rain. I know sometimes people get bummed out when the weather's not beautiful and sunny, but as a avid gardener and someone that has lots of property to water, it is wonderful when that job is taken off my hands. It actually frees up a couple hours a day just by letting the skies do the watering. So thank you for a little rain. It's been a dry summer, which has been nice, but it's been hard to keep up with the watering. So it's a pleasure to have that happening in the garden. And what else is going on in the garden? My corn is starting to get close to being ready. It's getting tall. And, the stalks are really strong. And in between the corn, I've planted beans. So they're starting to grab hold and use the corn stalks to climb up. For those of you that remember back in first grade, you might have learned about American Indians and the three sisters. That was the corn, the squash, and the beans, and how you can plant them together, complementary planting. And the corn stalks act as the pole for the beans to grow up. And the squash goes out to, it really expands and protects the area around the corn to keep any animals from getting to the corn. So they really work together, but I do have squash in the garden as well, but I didn't plant them as the three sisters. But anyway, the corn's looking good. The tomatoes are just going wild, and there is nothing like fresh picked tomatoes. We have yellow ones, orange ones, and red ones. The green ones we have are not supposed to be green, but every once in a while a green one falls off and then I have to make something green. Actually, next week I'll bring in my green gazpacho recipe for you. It's a great thing to do with those green tomatoes. But this week I have a recipe to share that will use a lot of your tomatoes up just by making some delicious, delicious salsa. And I have a vegetable fajita enchilada casserole that is just wonderful. And I'll get into that in a minute and tell you how you can adjust it for your family and change it up using the same basic ingredients. But today I also have a guest with me who I want to let you know about. Her name is Anna Sabritsky, and she is an Ayurvedic healer. And she is based in New York. Unlike Claudia Welsh, who I had on a couple of months ago, who's based in in New Mexico, Anna is local to my area, and so I'm really thrilled to get to know her. And we will, explore what Ayurvedic medicine is about and what one can do to find out about their different body types and constitutions and how diets might differ depending on what your constitution is. So we'll do that in a minute. But I wanted to share with you a documentary that I saw this week. It's called Food Matters, and I'm actually going to be talking about it out at Southampton College tomorrow, where I will be presenting a healthy lunch to a group of doctors who I'm very happy to say are osteopath doctors who are studying nutrition. The Dr. Van Arsdale, who heads up that program out at the Southampton Hospital, it's about community medicine program. And a large component of it is nutrition. And they are watching this movie, Food Matters. And it is a great movie. It really talks about how we are what we eat. And that's going back all the way to Hippocrates, who said, you are what you eat, or let thy food be thy medicine, and thy medicine be thy food. And it's such words of wisdom, and we've gotten so far away from it. And this film is very, very informative. It talks about, growing food that has nutritional qualities that you don't get from conventional farming. If you're growing food in depleted soil, your food's going to miss main ingredients and minerals and elements that are lacking in our diets, and we have no other way of getting it. And so when you're using commercial fertilizer, you might have the nitrogen, the phosphorus, and the potassium in the fertilizer. But what about all those other trace minerals that they don't put in? Naturally in soil, there's all these trace minerals, and everything is an integral part to healthy nutrition. And when we try to isolate all these different separate vitamins and minerals, we're not taking everything into consideration and in its right context. And so it's really important to think about that and to think about how different minerals and chemicals react with different things. And it's even like in drug, when they're pushing drugs and medicines, they might do a study about this particular drug or medicine, but again, they're not doing it in, they're not doing it, pairing it up with all the different possible reactions that it could have with all the different medicines. And so it's really a tough thing to get a clear picture on what we should be eating. And so, although it's really not that tough, if you really just go back to basics, and that's basically what this movie is talking about when it says food matters, you need to just go back to eating good quality ingredients. A broccoli is not a broccoli. All broccolis are not the same. A broccoli that is grown in soil that is vibrant and filled with minerals and nutrients is going to be much better for you than a commercially grown, pesticide-filled broccoli. So really think about that. I always encourage you to use organic vegetables in every recipe, and organic dairy and sustainably raised fish or other proteins that you might be choosing to use. Think about where it comes from and know that it makes a difference, and it's worth the investment of the extra money. You'll save it in the long run in doctor bills. And one of the uplifting thoughts about this movie is that we really can take control of our health and make a difference. And in this movie, a woman named Charlotte Gerson was interviewed. Her father started the Gerson Therapy and Institute, and talked about the soil and going way back, when he first started this institute, talking about the foods and that the body can heal itself if you give it the right means. And, you can nourish the body and it will heal itself. So it's just mind-boggling when you think that $300 billion per year are used on drugs or used to create drugs in North America alone. I mean, it's a big business, and keeping everybody healthy is not a big business. Who would make the money if everybody was healthy? So you have to realize that there's an agenda here, that the drug testing is funded by drug companies, and that the that the research that's being done is being funded by drug companies, and that drug companies fund everything, and that the government does not have the kind of money it needs to do the drug testing. So you have to realize that they're not really looking out for our best interest, that you have to look out for your own best interest and take control of that and do whatever you can to boost your health and be aware of the vitamins that you want to get, and you can really turn around the downsides of cancer and cardiovascular disease by changing your diet, by meditating, by having a healthy lifestyle. So it's, you know, it's nice to know that you have some control and that you can feel empowered when you see a movie like this instead of just being depressed. So I recommend everybody, if you can find the movie Food Matters, I think you can take it out from your library. You might be able to download it, but it's worth checking out. So let me tell you my recipe so that I can move on to my guest. The recipe that I brought in today is a vegetable fajita enchilada. And the thing I love about this recipe is how versatile it is and that you can make it ahead of time when you're having company. It's in a casserole lasagna pan, so it's not an individually rolled meal. It's very easy to put together. And I'm going to share it with you in a vegan style, so that's, you know, dairy-free. But I'm going to tell you what you can do to have it with dairy if you want, to have it with fish if you want, or to have it with chicken if you want. Because I realize that every family is different and that you're cooking for different people. And sometimes it's great to have a recipe that you can adjust and, you know, make one batch that is vegetarian, one batch that might have a protein source for someone who won't feel satisfied unless it has chicken in it or fish in it or even just cheese. Okay, so this basic recipe, vegan style, you would like to have one large organic onion, one organic red pepper, one organic yellow pepper, and one organic orange pepper. Now, peppers are one of those vegetables on the 10 most important list to get organic. They're heavily sprayed, and so you do want to invest in an organic pepper. And if you're like me, you know, I shop at so many different places to try to find the things that I want in an affordable way. So get to know your local sources where you can buy things and, you know, that have a high quality. Then you need an 8-ounce package of organic mushrooms, or if you're at a farmer's market, just get a nice bag of fresh organic mushrooms, 1/4 cup of olive oil, 1 bunch of fresh organic cilantro, stems removed, washed, spun dry, and chopped, 1 cup of organic frozen corn, or if you have access to organic corn, that's great. You can cut it off of the ear and just use the kernels, and you'd like 1 cup of that, 2 teaspoons of cumin, 1 teaspoon salt, 1 teaspoon chili powder, which is basically a concoction of cumin and chipotle and some red pepper and garlic. So get a nice mixture of that. 1 can of organic black beans, or, of course, if you think ahead and you want to soak your beans, you can do that. When you cook your beans, make sure you put kombu in it. And when you're buying organic beans, try to find a can that has kombu, that was made with kombu. Eden Brand has that, and I believe Westbrae also has kombu. Kombu is a seaweed, and when that is cooked with the beans, it makes the beans less gassy. So if you find that you suffer from gas when you eat beans, cooking it with kombu is a really wonderful thing to know about. You want 2 jars of your favorite organic salsa. I use a Muir Glen bean and corn salsa. It's medium heat, and my kids just love it. 1 pack of organic corn tortillas, or if you'd like to use flour tortillas, you can. I prefer using corn tortillas. You know, then again, if I have anyone there that has a wheat allergy, good and clear for that. And then you want 1 pound of soy cheese. You know, there's many different soy cheeses out there, or a rice cheese, some sort of alternative cheese substitute that you like. Or if you are okay with cheese, you can just use some organic cheddar cheese, Monterey Jack cheese, and then this becomes a vegetarian dish as opposed to a vegan dish. And basically, you are going to put this together as one would a lasagna, okay? First, sauté the onions and the peppers. And as I've said before, you always start your root vegetables first. So onion being the root vegetable, put that in and give it like a 5-minute head start. I like to cook mostly in a cast iron frying pan. That way I am getting some extra iron into the dish for my kids. So I'll saute the onions for 5 minutes. I'll add some garlic to that, which I don't have on the recipe here, but I always add garlic to my stir fries. So I'd say about 4 cloves of chopped garlic would be a good addition to this. Then throw in your peppers. Cook that down a little bit till they start getting soft. Then throw in your mushrooms. Okay, and you're sauteing all this in the 1/4 cup of olive oil. Once those things are soft, you can add the frozen corn and all the spices, the 2 teaspoons of cumin, the salt, the chili powder, and let that come together. When it's hot, you want to add the can of black beans, and I usually drain out the liquid in the beans and just add the beans. If you want, you can also add a can of organic refried beans. I do that sometimes. And so you're just making one big layer of mush. And that will be what you're going to be layering in between the corn tortillas. So I take out a casserole pan. You can do a 9x13, or usually I'm doing even a little larger lasagna pan. It's probably like, 12x15. It's a nice size pan. And I first put salsa down on the bottom so that the corn tortillas won't stick, and I layer the bottom of the pan with flat, uncooked corn tortillas. And I really, kind of fill the space with the corn tortillas, and where they're overlapping, I cut that part off so that there's not too much overlapping. It's really like a single layer. Then I put my beans and vegetable mixture down on top of the corn tortillas. Then I add a little salsa. Then I add a little of my cheese substitute or my cheese. Then I start again. I put another layer of the corn tortillas, another layer of the beans, the cheese, the salsa. And then I top it with the cheese. So the top layer is just, has salsa and then cheese on top, or soy cheese on top. And I bake that in a 375 oven for 35, 40 minutes, something like that, until it's bubbly hot and ready to serve. And it's delicious. And you can serve it with, if you eat dairy, you can serve it with sour cream, or you can serve it with guacamole. You can serve it with some salsa. And actually, to use up my tomatoes, I made a great fresh salsa yesterday, just using 3 ripe tomatoes that I just picked, 1/2 cup of chopped onions, 4 jalapeno chilies, and you can use less or more depending on how spicy you like it, 1/4 cup of chopped cilantro, 1 to 2 teaspoons of salt, and juice of 1 lime. And just mix that together. And that can actually stay in the fridge for a couple of days. And it's actually even better if, you put that together and let it sit for at least an hour before you serve it. But that's just a delicious salsa that you can use on this fajita. If you want to, add grilled chicken to this, or you want to add some grilled fish or shrimp or anything like that, you can just do that in any of the layers. And and then it becomes a meat entree as well as a vegetarian entree for those that need it to be vegetarian. So that's it for the recipe this week. I'd like to now bring on my guest who's been waiting patiently, Anna Sobritsky. Anna, are you there?
Yes.
Hi, Anna. How are you?
Hi, I'm really good. How are you?
Good. So I just want to tell everybody, in case they just came on and didn't hear my little intro of who you are at the beginning.
Okay.
I just want to say that you studied first at Columbia University, and then you studied at the Ayurvedic Institute in New Mexico.
That's right.
And you did a lot of other studying in between, of course. You've done workshops.
Yeah, I went to Ayurvedic Nutrition School. It's called Ayurveda's Beauty Care.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's in New York as well?
That's in New York as well. And just recently I graduated from the Natural Gourmet Institute in New York.
As a chef?
As a chef, yeah.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Yeah.
So we'll have a lot to talk about with cooking
as
well.
Thank you, yeah, it's very exciting.
So, as an Ayurvedic practitioner, can
right.
you first just tell my listening audience, what is Ayurvedic medicine, or what does Ayurvedic medicine, what's the philosophy behind it?
Right. Well, I'll try to be brief, but it's a 5,000-year-old system of medicine originally from India, and it's a system based on using five elements, earth, fire, water, air, and ether, into a combination of three main body types of constitution. And then Ayurveda, based on your what your constitution is, develops the best nutrition and the best medicine for you. So it's a very personalized system of healing your body and your mind and achieving optimal health through a very personalized diet and lifestyle.
And how does someone know what body type they are? What, you know, how do you tell what your constitution is?
Right, and this is a really interesting question because there are many different answers to that, and there's many different ways to determine your constitution. Of course, the best way to do it is with a physician who has a lot of years of experience. The most precise way of determining your constitution is through your pulse. So they can go into your pulse and tell you what your predominant body type is. And every one of us is either has one. There's three main, let me just name them. There's three main constitutions. There's kapha, which is earth and water.
And how do you spell that?
K-A-T-H-A, kapha.
Uh-huh.
So that is the heaviest of the constitution. It has earth and water as the two predominant elements. And pitta, which has fire and water.
And that's P-I-T-T-A, right?
P-I-T-T-A.
Uh-huh.
And finally, vata, V-A-T-A. And vata consists of air and ether, and that's the lightest of the three constitutions. And most people are the combination of two body types. So you would be, for example, kapha pitta or pitta vata. And, of course...
What was pitta? I know kapha, you said it was earth and water, and vata was air and ether.
Yes, and pitta is fire and water.
Fire and water.
Yeah. And based on what your constitution is, you can develop the most optimal diet and lifestyle for that person. And hopefully whatever imbalance they have developed throughout their life, you can eliminate it.
Through their diet.
Through their diet and lifestyle.
Uh-huh. Wow.
Yeah.
It's so interesting because, you know, it's hard enough to get people to eat a healthy, wholesome diet. And now if you throw other little... you know, changes in, like, to eat for a particular constitution, you know, and people are trying to eat within their family and eat together. How does that work? Like, how do you, you know, how does one eat for their constitution, for instance? Like, what would be different?
Right. And you're absolutely right. I mean, the basic principle is you eat, you know, for every constitution, you eat whole grain, the dark leafy green vegetables, like across, if you don't want to think about any very particular specialized diet, you eat whole food diet, you eat plenty of vegetables, you eliminate all refined sugars, and that's the underlying foundation for all three constitutions. Now, for most people that don't have a disease or an imbalance, that's enough. But when you're dealing with a particular disorder, for example, if someone has diabetes,
mm-hmm.
That person, Ayurvedically, diabetes is increased kapha. So that person has too much earth and water element. So you then are challenged with, you need to work with that particular imbalance. So then you're forced to develop a diet that has really very low sugar and a lot of bitters, because bitters is what reduces sugar in the blood level. So it's really beneficial for people that have diabetes to eat a lot of bitters. And if you look at most herbal supplements for diabetes, they will be extreme bitters. Bitter melon, fenugreek, and other herbs and spices that are used for diabetes are really bitter. So in that
what
case,
kind of foods are bitter for those that are listening?
An example of bitter food would be coffee without sugar or milk, dark 70% and more chocolate would be bitter. Those are kind of fun bitter foods.
Uh-huh. And then I could be on that diet.
And then there's dark leafy green vegetables. And pretty much any dark leafy green vegetable, whether or not it tastes bitter to you, it is a your body registers it as a bitter food.
Uh-huh.
And of course, there's some really exaggerated bitter tastes like dandelion leaf. If you really want to help your liver or work with your diabetes, you would eat a lot of dandelion leaves because that's an extreme bitter.
Mm-hmm. And that tastes bitter.
And it tastes
dandelion actually is one of those that tastes bitter.
Yeah, exactly. So to answer your question, I don't know if I'm being clear or not. If some people are forced to be really specific and develop sort of a more complicated system of nutrition, whereas for most people, if you just eat whole food diet, that's pretty much enough for them to stay healthy.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, after I had Claudia on before, I had another person on who was also an Ayurvedic healer. Somebody had asked me, you know, what would someone eat for, you know, if they were prone towards depression, for instance.
That's an excellent question.
And would that be different for each person who has a different constitution, or would there be a diet that's kind of generic for someone who suffers with depression?
Right. I'm thinking of a long and a short answer. I guess the shorter answer is, if you look at depression in terms of Ayurveda,
mm-hmm.
Ayurveda would look at depression as a kapha mental disorder. So they would say you have too much earth and water elements in your mind. That's why you feel heavy. So they would say that you need to lighten up your mind. And for that, you would have to do a series of exercises that's good for depression. Breathing is excellent for depression. Breathing is, I would say, absolutely must if you're struggling with depression. And, of course, diet.
But you don't mean breathing. I mean, we all breathe without thinking about it. You mean actual breath exercises, like yoga, breathing exercises, right?
Yeah, breathing exercises that are called in Ayurveda, they're called pranayama, or the way of moving your energy in your body, your breath, moving it correctly so that it distributes air or prana, or as Chinese say, qi, correctly in all the right places. So there are certain exercises that stimulate, breathing. And if you're, for example, if you're struggling with depression, you would use a lot of very rapid breaths with your stomach. So pumping your stomach, and you get your energy moving throughout your body, because a lot of times depression is associated with stagnation.
Mm-hmm.
And you really need to. You need to move physically, you need to move your body, you need to move your prana or chi or your energy, and also eating lighter foods. So for somebody that struggles with depression, I would say vegetarian diet is a good way to combat depression.
Mm-hmm.
So having a lighter diet, of course, full of fresh, local, seasonal foods that are easier for your body to absorb and assimilate, and also that you don't, you don't get too heavy. So eating a lighter amount with every meal would also allow you to reduce your kapha in the body, or reduce that earth and water elements. Basically a lot of movement, a lot of forced breathing exercises, and really a light diet. So depending on, of course, you would have to talk to that individual and see what their particular situation is, because a lot of times you first need to eliminate the cause of depression. You need to understand, you know, are they in a good relationship? That also could be part of working with them, and that's also an Ayurvedic approach, is to figure out what is the root of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so eliminating the root and then giving them support with diet and lifestyle.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of the people that I talk to who are struggling with depression are children. And that's why there's so many children that they put on these antidepressant drugs. It has me just so concerned. And so I don't think that the kids really know what the root is. You know, they just are. They just, like, know they're not happy and they're just struggling with it and they don't know what to do. And, you know, and it just seems to be an epidemic.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you really touched on a very important point. I have two children, so I see how their mood is dependent on their diet and lifestyle. And I would say one of the evils with children is too much refined sugars.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, before anything else, if you're working with children with depression, I would first of all eliminate all refined sugars, because what sugars, especially refined sugars, do is that they give you this jump of energy,
and then you fall
really quickly, and that creates a lot of volatility in their and their emotions are also up and down. So in order to even out their emotion, you need to really eliminate the sugars and give them more fruit, preferably fresh squeezed juices if they want a sweet drink,
mm-hmm.
And just really give them fresh whole food, you know, choices, and not any refined fats and sugars and fast food and all that.
Well, actually, you said nuts. You know, in this movie that I just watched in Food Matters, they talked about two handfuls of cashews.
Right.
That the reaction that, or the chemical reaction that creates in a child, is equal to that of a Prozac pill. And that, you know, giving a child two handfuls of cashews can help immensely. And they were also talking about high doses of niacin.
Absolutely, right.
High doses of niacin, that there's been incredible studies with that as towards depression, which I hadn't really heard before. You know, I've heard of St. John's Wort and all these, you know, and many other things, but the niacin factor, and, you know, I studied biodynamics and Rudolf Steiner, and, you know, he always, he encouraged kids, you know, giving a child a handful of nuts on their way to walking to school. Not that so many kids walk to school anymore, but still, you know, on their way to school, to stimulate their brain function. That nuts
Absolutely.
Were great for brain function.
Absolutely. Because they have so many different types of omega 3 and 6 and 9, and it's really great. It's basically food for your brain.
It is food for your brain, but they never talked, you know, he wasn't really focusing on depression back then, you know, that wasn't an issue. So
right.
It was interesting to hear it talking about, you know, eating cashews for depression. I wonder, and I don't know if you know the answer, whether that would be the same for walnuts or almonds.
Yeah, walnuts are one of the best nuts.
I know walnuts are for brain function, but would it be for depression too, do you think?
I think having, I think when you talk about nuts, you really are talking about those good oils that they contain.
Right.
And I think as the foundation of Ayurvedic medicine, oils are the most, and that I think is the contribution and the different approach of Ayurveda in comparison to, let's say, Chinese medicine, is Ayurveda uses a lot of oils for healing. So if you think about all those really good oils that are beneficial for the brain, then I think all those nuts are wonderful, and they're really, really beneficial for depression. And I think if you don't pay attention and buy organic, you know, good quality oils, and you are consuming a lot of refried or, God forbid, partially hydrogenated oils, that could even cause depression.
Right.
Because you're not getting enough of those good fuel for your brain.
Right. And these days, so many people...
So I would say a variety of nuts and, you know, different kinds every day.
Right. And what I was going to say is these days, so many people focus on, oh, it's so high in calories. It's like, you know, if you're eating whole grain, wholesome food, throw out the idea of, like, eating for a diet, you know, weight loss. I think people get stuck in that, and they go for these fat-free things and dry roasted nuts. It's like, you know what? The oils are okay if they're good, healthy oils, and you need them, right?
They're wonderful for you. Yeah.
I see these young girls who, like, cut out all oils and carbs, and next thing you know, they don't get their periods, and they don't, you know, their whole body's messed up.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
You need those.
Absolutely. Yeah,
anyway,
I couldn't agree with you more.
Anna, we need to take a break for just a few minutes, but let's when we come back, let's talk more about kids and depression. Think of some of these foods, because this has been coming up for me a lot with kids, people asking me all the time. Okay?
Okay, excellent.
Thanks.
Thank you.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Krishnamurti's dialogue is between him and us.
Krishna.
Krishnamurti's talks are about the art of living, which is greater than all things that human beings have created by mind or hand.
Krishna.
It's greater than all the scriptures and their gods.
Krishna.
It is only through the art of living that a new culture can come into being.
Krishna.
All existence is relationship. Without it, you cannot live.
Krishna.
There is only the actual and nothing else.
Krishna.
What is taking place now is free of time.
Krishna.
This is the evolution of our conditioning.
Krishna.
The art of living can come into being only when thought does not contaminate love.
Krishna.
Krishnamurti Talks, Thursday nights at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Become enlightened.
Krishna.
Join us, Bruce and Marianne Curtis, Fridays at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network for Truth and Freedom. We present provocative conversations with the world's most brilliant minds in the areas of holistic health, spiritual wisdom, politics, and a host of other topics. Some of our topics include the latest work in non-invasive therapy on the brain, the truth beneath the global economic meltdown, healing power of the breath, and the sublime truth beyond all religious traditions. In this age of transformation, we need to look beneath the surface appearance of things to see the underlying reality. From material that is always illuminating and often liberating, tune in to Truth and Freedom on the Progressive Radio Network Fridays at 3 p.m.
This is Mitchell J. Rabin to tell you that we have two new time slots every Monday and Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Progressive Radio Network. Join me as I interview and dialogue with the sung and unsung heroes of society with passion and with commitment. Scientists, healers, filmmakers, musicians, environmentalists, and gurus on Mondays, and a call-in show where you'll be the focus on Wednesdays. Again, Monday and Wednesday at 6 p.m., join Mitchell Rabin as together we create a better world.
This is PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and we're recording live. So I am here with my guest, Anna Sabritsky, who is an Ayurvedic healer. And if you have any questions for either of us, you can call into the studio. The number here is 888-874-4888. And Anna, are you with me again?
Yes. Uh-huh.
So we were just talking about depression and how Ayurvedic healing and foods and diet can help benefit that. And we were talking about nuts. And we were also just talking about, you know, staying away from refined sugars.
That's right.
As a wonderful way to combat that. Any other ideas?
Well, what I was thinking is it, for me, it just comes back to the two pillars of Ayurveda, which is diet and lifestyle. So, like you said, less refined sugars, more nuts, more fresh vegetables, whole grains, but also simple things like, you know, being in fresh air or being in nature for children, I think is really beneficial to combat any depression. So, you know, being outside, even if it's for a day or a weekend, if you live in the city, I think is essential. And another thing that I forgot to mention is meditation is really great for combating depression. And just, you know, getting more in touch with yourself. And even for children, there are programs for children that teach them basic meditation. I think that can be really helpful as well.
I had a beautiful book. I don't remember the name of it, but when my kids were little, it was a beautiful meditation book for them.
Right.
And, you know, it just had them, you know, close their eyes and focus on, you know, their toes and then
That's
work
right.
their way up, kind of like a deep relaxation that you would do after, you know, a bunch of hatha yoga. And
That's right. That's exactly what it is, something really simple, really basic, but teaching them how to get control over their emotions and just relaxing.
Right, and also focusing on the light and the light coming down and shining all around them. And,
right.
You know, those beautiful images really can help transport a child
right.
to another place.
Yeah, and they're so open and they're so, you know, they're really hungry for learning, actually. So if you just introduce it to them gently, I think they might just take the lead and do it themselves.
Yeah. You know, the thing is, those things, you really have to start young. Once a child's like pre-adolescent and adolescent, you know, they really don't want to hear anything from their parents. So,
right.
you know, you either have to start young or you have to package it in a way for the pre-adolescent that that looks cool, that looks hip. And so that's why sometimes, you know, yoga can look cool to them, you know.
Yeah.
And if you can get them to a yoga class or, you know, something outside that is not, that they don't feel like their parent is taking them to or leading them on, but that is group-oriented because
Absolutely.
They're so involved with, you know, their friends are everything at that age. And
Absolutely.
But that's when so many kids are starting on these antidepressant drugs, and, you know, it's really a challenge to try to help guide them through, even keeping them off refined sugars, you know, with the amount of commercials and the bombardment of media that is
right.
that these kids have to fight with. It's hard. It's really
That's
hard.
Right. Yeah, and I think one of the main foundation is your own personal example. And when they see you eat well and when they see that you don't drink Coke or, you know, eat those refined sugars, they'll just by osmosis, they'll get it, and they will. It will become part of their lifestyle. I see this with my own children.
Mm-hmm. Now, can you use Western medicine if you're using Ayurvedic treatments?
Of course, but you have to be really careful, and you need to consult with your physician. And it depends on what Western medicine you're taking. They could be a drug interaction with the Ayurvedic herb. So you have to be really careful, and you have to really, a lot of times, it's a good idea to have your Ayurvedic practitioner call your doctor or vice versa and for them to work together.
Do you find most allopathic doctors are open to that?
No.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so.
But a lot of them don't have time, or they don't believe in it, or they just don't want the liability.
Uh-huh.
So it's not that easy. But it does happen, and it happens more and more. And, you know, as more and more insurance companies cover alternative medicine, it becomes more understandable for the allopathic doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you also can look for a clinic that's more open to alternative methods or an integration of Western and alternative methods.
Uh-huh. Do you know allopathic doctors that you can recommend to your patients that are open to working with you?
I cannot say it off the top of my head. I have mm-hmm. to think about it, and it's a good idea. I might have to actually
develop those relationships.
List it on my website and just really think about it. But I have had patients who see both allopathic doctors and Ayurvedic practitioners, and they are really successful at, for example, getting off of a certain drug or medicine with the help of Ayurvedic herbs and Ayurvedic remedies.
Mm-hmm. Now, if somebody wanted to get in touch with you, how would they do that?
They can look on my website. That's ayurvediclight.com.
How do you spell Ayurvedic? Because I think a lot of people might not know how to spell
that.
Yeah,
I know. It's spelled AyurvedicLight, as one word, .com.
Uh-huh.
So Ayurvedic Light. And it has a lot of information, and it has links to events and other places where you can learn about Ayurveda, or you can go for treatment. And also, I wanted to mention about a workshop.
Good, I was just going to say that. Good.
Yeah. That's not on the website, but I really wanted people to know. And one of my favorite teachers, and I know she was on your show a few months ago, Claudia Welch, that introduced us, she is teaching this really incredible seminar on women's health and Ayurveda in Montauk on the weekend of September 10th, 11th, and 12th. And you can look that information up. I believe I can give you her website, and that is Dr. Claudia Welch, CLAUDIAWELCH.com. And I believe she should have a link to that seminar, and if you can't find that information, you can email me, and I'm happy to send you a link to that workshop. But I've been at that workshop a couple of times, and it's really incredible.
And you said someone else, another teacher, was going to be doing it with her?
Yes, that's right. Dr. Robert Svoboda, who is one of the three leading Ayurvedic doctors in the United States, and who is retiring in 2011, and this maybe is his last public appearance.
Uh-huh.
Because he really wants to take the time off and basically retire from his teaching work and just do his internal work from now on. And he's going to be co-teaching that seminar, so it's a really unique opportunity for somebody who is passionate about Ayurveda or just wants to learn. And also, I just want to mention that it was really hard for me to find information on women's health in Ayurveda. It's a really male-dominated science, and a lot of information is actually about men and man's health. And this is really unique, and I know Claudia has spent many years putting this together, and she's just found out that she's going to be published with her new book on women's health, so
mm-hmm.
she's very knowledgeable. And it's a really unique body of knowledge, Ayurveda and women's health, so I highly recommend it for anyone who's interested in women's health.
Now, can you use Ayurvedic remedies to help with menopause and, you know, or menstrual cramps, that kind of thing? Is that what you're talking about with women's health? Or?
Absolutely. Both of them, or fertility is also a huge issue. And that was actually my thesis in Ayurvedic school. Because until I went to Ayurvedic school and I really started to learn about it, I didn't realize how massive is the problem in the United States of women trying to get pregnant and not being able to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a combination of, you know, I heard you mentioning, you know, a lot of pesticides and herbicides and having the soil that's not rich enough in minerals, so not getting enough nutrients, and also having a lot of toxicity from the residue in the food, and also, you know, getting pregnant too late in their life. And it's just a combination of our lifestyle.
And the stress of the lifestyle in the in metropolitan areas as well.
Absolutely, and the diet. And it was really striking for me to find out that actually 80% of those cases are related to men and not women. And we're so used to taking the blame.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's just like immediately you can't conceive it's a woman. But the studies actually show it's mostly in men. So it's really, it's just a fascinating area to learn. And Claudia can break it down. And she's actually a Chinese medical doctor as well as an Ayurvedic practitioner. So mm-hmm. she has those two points of view. And she also gives really helpful remedies and ways to deal with different phases of life and women's health.
Well, that's great. I know I'm very interested in taking that workshop. I don't know a lot about Ayurvedic medicine, but what I do know, and you know, I do know about different body types from a anthroposophical view.
Right.
And I think, you know, they go a lot hand in hand. And
that's right.
You know, and as a natural food chef and being a proponent of eating well for all these years, it just makes, you know, I just love learning more more ways of looking at it, because, you know, you can get something from every different modality.
Absolutely.
And you kind of blend them, and you know, and there's, I don't think there's any one way. Like in this movie, they were talking about raw foods.
Right.
And they were, you know, the man, David Wolf, who's, you know, a real raw food proponent.
Oh, yeah, I know him, right.
You know, he was saying how, you know, 51% of your food should be raw. You know, that when you cook food, you're instantly, you know, destroying a lot of the vitamins. And then you take a macrobiotic standpoint where most of the food they eat is cooked, or at least pickled. You know, they don't really eat just raw food. So it's really interesting that here are two very good diets that both have a lot of validity, that both can promote health, but they're completely different in philosophy. And you know, so if you know, I guess I've become very eclectic after studying all these different modalities, and, you know, I think it's really good to not be too structured or too stiff with any one.
Too rigid, that's right.
Right, too rigid, that you really just have to breathe, because we're dealing with such a different, varied, world now, that there, you know, nothing is as it was. Everything is different, and we have to go with the flow. And when you talk about fertility, it's really interesting. I know a lot of women who struggled with becoming pregnant and finally, you know, gave up and decided to adopt. Well, after they decided to adopt, that's when they got pregnant.
That is so true, and we talked to Claudia about this many, many times, because it's stress-related, and that's another huge factor in our lifestyle, is women are not able to conceive because they're too stressed out. So the body prioritizes between, you know, stress and fertility. They decide that stress is something that needs more attention right now than fertility.
Right, and the minute that stress, just even the stress of trying to get pregnant, even the stress of their work.
Self-imposed pressure.
Right, the minute that's relieved, and they said, okay, well, forget it, I give up, we're going to adopt, and I'm going to love this little baby that I'm going to get, And the next thing you know, because they're not thinking about it, all of a sudden they get pregnant.
And they're having fun with it, hopefully.
Right, right. And so, you know, so it just shows how much, you know, our mind affects our health. And that when you're, I think when you're too rigid and, you know, that goes to also, you know, the moms that make their kids like crazy with, you know, don't get fat and don't eat this because of fat.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, give up, let go of the, you know, eating for weight loss and just eat healthy, eat good, wholesome, healthy, and not for weight loss. And the weight loss will happen, you know?
That's right. And let them run around and hopefully that will take care of the weight gain.
Right, right.
That's right.
So that's really interesting. So I hope to be at that workshop. And when is it? When did you say it was?
It is the weekend of September 10th, 11th, and 12th. It starts on Friday afternoon. I'm opening my calendar. And it is...
out in Montauk, right?
Out in Montauk. And it goes until Sunday afternoon.
Okay.
So, yeah, I will be there for sure. And I hope to see you there.
Great. I hope to be there. So what else about Ayurvedic would you like to share? I know we talked about a good recipe for this season. Is there anything that, you know, as a natural food chef and an Ayurvedic healer, is there a recipe that you think is really great for this season?
Well, I wanted to just say that right now, since we're transitioning from summer, which is the time of fire, Pitta is mostly fire, to Vata, which is air, and it's much cooler and drier. I think eating just in general, eating more warm, unctuous, oily foods like soups and stews, and using warming spices like ginger, you know, is really beneficial. And I just wanted to say that there is a page of recipes on my website, so if you're interested, you can look up different recipes depending on if you're looking to, you know, work with Vata, Pitta, or Kapha. You can look at different recipes according to different constitutions.
Mm-hmm. Now, if somebody wasn't going to go to an Ayurvedic practitioner to have their pulse determine their constitution, are there certain guidelines that they can look at as to what a different constitution would represent, like an earth water versus a fire water?
Right, definitely. And, you know, you can even find websites that will give you a basic test, like a 10-question questionnaire, and you can, you know, roughly determine if you're Vata, Pitta, or Kapha. They're not very accurate. I would say they're about 50-50. You get a 50-50 chance of determining the correct constitution. But if you want, I can briefly go over what a Kapha, Pitta, or Vata would look like.
Yeah, I would love that.
Okay. So, like I mentioned, Kapha is earth and water, and Kapha is responsible for immunity in the body. So it's basically the energy that forms the structure and provides the glue to hold different cells together. It's lubricating, and it provides water for the whole body, and it's very moisturizing. Anytime you're going through a trauma and you need to heal, it's the Kapha that's doing the healing. If you look at a particular individual and you would say, this person is a Kapha person, you would imagine someone who is very loving, very kind, very forgiving. Physically, they would look like they have a heavy constitution, a lot of times wavy hair, big brown eyes, you know, big, strong bones, and in harmony, in the positive way, the Kapha would be all loving and kind and forgiving. But if they get out of balance, they get respiratory diseases, and they get a little lazy, a little greedy, and attached. So those are like emotional imbalances of Kapha. So hopefully that gives you a little bit of a picture.
Right.
Of what
there's always the higher road and the lower road.
Yeah, exactly. And because, you know, there's an ideal, and then when something gets out of balance, then you can see what the imbalance looks like. Now, a Pitta individual, Pitta is fire and water, and Pitta is responsible for all metabolism in the body. So it governs digestion, absorption, assimilation of nutrients in the body. And if you're looking at a pitta person that's in balance, you will see somebody who's full of understanding and intelligence. If you imagine a really successful and a CEO of a company, that's pretty much the picture type of a pitta person. And out of balance, unfortunately, pitta person becomes angry, jealous, and even, you know, can go into a rage. So, yeah, and the vata person, finally the vata person, vata is air and ether, and vata governs all the movement in the body. So anytime there's any movement, that's vata, blinking, muscle movement, cell movement, pulsation of the heart, that's all movement of vata. And in balance, vata person is very creative, it's very active, it's very flexible, but when vata person gets out of balance, it's, they get anxious, fearful, they can't sleep, they get a variety of neurological disorders. And you just have to be very careful, and the number one treatment for vata is really good lifestyle, so going to sleep early. And
Like we were saying, or you said at the beginning, usually people are not just one. They're usually some combination of the three. Correct?
And even to complicate it even more, for example, you can have a constitution of a kapha person, but have a pitta imbalance. Or have a vata imbalance because of your lifestyle.
You know, like I was saying with taking all these different things, I mean, it also makes me think of astrology, you know, and when someone has their astrological chart done, you know, they might be in Aries, but, you know, they're in Aries with their moon in Virgo, and that's a very different picture than someone who's just, you know, straight, you know, Aries, everything. So all these things are so complex, and they're fascinating, and it's amazing how so many of them have their core very similar. Very similar. I think it's a lot like, you know, a lot of religions. If you get to the core, they're coming from the same place.
That's right.
Anyway, we're running out of time, but I want to thank you, Anna, for joining me today. It's been so great to talk with you.
Thank you so much.
And
it was absolutely my pleasure. Thank you.
You're welcome, and we will definitely rendezvous out in Montauk. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, me too.
All right.
Great to meet you.
Everybody,
thank you so much for a wonderful interview.
Oh, you're welcome. And again, I've been talking to Anna Sabritsky, and you can find her at AyurvedicLight.com. And I am Bhavani, and you can find me at IEatGreen.com. Have a great rest of the day, and I'll see you next Wednesday.
Thank you, Bhavani.
Bye. I'm a